Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. I don't consider myself a sports fan. I'm sorry if that comes as some sort of disappointing surprise to some of you out there, but while I have been to more games than I can count, it was largely due to the fact that I'm from a very small town and that's kind of all there was to do. Also, I was in band, and apparently football games simply cannot be played on crisp fall evenings without a bunch of people in ill-fitting uniforms that are hot in the summer and cold in the winter showing up to carry around heavy brass instruments and fighting off the accompanying frostbite. But I digress. Maybe the reason I'm not very into sports is because it never seemed like a welcoming place for me. Far better researchers and voices than I have noted this strange dichotomy of the homoeroticism of sports sitting alongside the homophobia in sports culture. Major league sports have been around since baseball's National League was formed in 1876, then the American League in 1901, followed by the National Football League in 1920. But it wouldn't be until February of 2014 when Jason Collins became the first out gay athlete to play in any of the four major North American pro sports leagues. And 2021, that the NFL had its first out openly gay active NFL player in Carl Nassib. In fact, in all of Olympic and professional sports history here in the US, despite their century-long history, we've had only a handful of people publicly come out, most of them doing so after retirement. There's actually a whole Wikipedia page devoted to the subject titled Homosexuality in Sports in the United States. It is depressingly short. None of this means that only a handful of people in professional sports for the last 100 plus years have been part of the queer community. It means that all the folks both on the field and behind the scenes that were queer had to keep it to themselves for a variety of reasons. Homophobia both off the field and from the fans kept people closeted. But a culture shift seems to be happening in professional sports in recent years. Kevin Maxson is a strength and conditioning coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's also the first male coach in major American men's professional sports to publicly come out as gay. I sat down to talk to him about what it takes to train some of the world's best athletes, divorcing yourself from outside criticism, and whether the NFL has finally become more welcoming to the queer community. Kevin Maxson, welcome to Head on Fire. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. I'm excited. It's been long overdue.
you've been a really busy person in these last few months, especially probably in the last few weeks. So for people who don't know you, tell people who you are and what it is that you do.
So I'm an assistant strength coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is going into my fourth year. So I got down here, I guess it was, 2021 or so. So I've been down here for 3 years, like I said, going on my fourth, and it's been very good so far.
I will say there might be a few people in my audience who are going to be like, but what's a Jacksonville Jaguar? And if you're not one of those people, you're probably laughing right now, but I there might be some folks out there. So I'm just, it's an NFL team, which is the football. It's a football team.
Yep. NFL team. We're in the AFC South. Exist in 1995. So yeah, it's a professional football team.
How'd you get your start?
So I've been coaching now as a strength coach for like 11 years. I started coaching right out of high school. I did an internship at a D1 AA school in Connecticut, and then just kind of bounced around a couple high schools, couple colleges. And my first real experience was at Army of West Point. Well, I went to a private gym out in California with a strength coach who's fantastic. And then from there, I went to Army West Point. From there, I went to University of Iowa, where I met Chris Doyle, who's a huge mentor and confidant and great friend of mine, who at some point ended up getting the head strength, or I think he was supposed to be the director of athletic performance or sports performance with the Jaguars. And I was at Vanderbilt at the time, and we had just got fired. And he called me and said, hey, you want to come down to Jacksonville? And I said, absolutely. And that's how I got here.
I am just struck that somebody can just kind of like accidentally bumble their way into working for the NFL. Cause that's like getting into the NFL is one of those like notorious pipe dreams. Like people like to share the statistics of the guys that play football in high school thinking they're going to make it to the NFL versus the guys that actually make it into the NFL. Do you ever pinch yourself? I mean, you said it's been a few years now. Does it feel real yet?
You mentioned they always talk about the statistics, and being a player is one thing. So every player has 60-something guys, but there's only about 4 strength coaches on each team, and there's 30 teams, I think. So you can do the math. There's only 120 or so of us, so it's a very small opportunity. So it is still kind of crazy. I think now I'm kind of so used to it where, to me, it's not a big deal. I get to work with some pretty high-profile guys, and to me, they're just regular. But I mean, very fortunate from the moment I started coaching just to be around great people who really prepared me to do a great job. And more importantly, I think when you get to this level, you have to be a good person. You just have to be a real, authentic person. You can't kind of be a fake. People find out if they don't want you around. So something worked out. People, I guess, think I'm a good coach and a good person. So it's worked out.
Strength coach. Now, I will say from my limited knowledge growing up in East Texas, I feel I didn't have any direct experience being on a football team, but growing up in East Texas, I feel like you get a lot of it by osmosis. So there is a very special relationship that I feel like football coaches especially like enjoy with their players. And I was about to ask, like, are you ever in the gym trying to get these guys to lift something even heavier or go someplace or, tell them they're doing it wrong and they give you a sideways look like, listen, buddy, I'm the one out on the field.
Not really. I think the guys who I work with, I think I have a good enough relationship with them where like we can be real and we can talk to each other. And yes, obviously sometimes it gets a little bit heated, but I think there's always an understanding that I'm trying to just help them make as much money as possible, and they appreciate it. But there's probably been a couple times where I've kind of had to walk away, or the player had to kind of walk. That's just kind of how it is. Like you said, I think there's a special bond and relationship with football coaches and players, and as a strength coach, we're around them more than the position coaches, so we really get to know them, and we're kind of like a escape from the monotony of going on the field, sitting in meetings, watching film, where they can come in and not do whatever they want, but actually enjoy it and take a breath and just train.
Maybe not as much room for ego in that weight room as those of us on the outside might think.
Yep, exactly.
So like I said, I'm from a small town in East Texas where football, that Friday, if you've ever seen Friday Night Lights, that's a little bit of what it's like growing up where I'm from. Football holds an almost like religious place in small town culture. From your perspective, like inside, doing this professionally, why do you think that is? Sure, baseball is called America's pastime, but it does not get the eyeballs that football does. So why do you think football is so special in American culture?
I think it's one of those things that really, it levels out the playing field quite a bit. If you look at it, you show up for the first day of football or you show up to the weight room and everybody's equal. And you have a chance to really prove yourself and show people that you can add value to the team, to whatever other individuals. And I think it helps you kind of, it's one of those things that's just like, it's undescribable. I know for me, I spent some time coaching in Texas, and it was just like it was one big family from the moment I got, like I was just embraced, and it was just all surrounding helping the student athletes, coming together as a coaching staff, coming together as a team, and just the sheer camaraderie that you get, you don't get it anywhere else. There's just such a huge commitment physically and mentally and emotionally that you kind of have to just, you kind of just have to do it. I think that, it's one of those things you have to be in it to really understand it. But those people who do, all you have to do is just kind of shake your head and nod, and there's just that understanding that it's just special. And I'm a huge baseball fan. I would say I'm more of a baseball fan than I am a football fan.
Nobody that writes, signs your checks is going to listen to this podcast. So they're not, you don't have to do that. Yeah. So it sounds like football just like instantly comes with community. It comes with like a built-in community. It comes with like a place for you, which is interesting because, you know, there's a lot of us that look at football and just feel like it's this, I don't know, from the outside in, it's always felt like this interesting extra, I mean, I guess it is a community, but it's a community with like really thick walls for folks that aren't exactly like what you think, you know, football community members should be like. So when you're operating at that level of sport, how do you deal with outside criticism? I've talked to screenwriters, I've talked to artists, I've talked to singers and songwriters, I've talked to a lot of like artsy folks about dealing with like public critique, but I've never talked to an athlete or anybody inside of professional athletics about that. So how do you deal with, you know, how do you keep focused on your job when millions of folks on couches all over the world insist they could do it better?
Well, the thing is they can't. Thank you. You can't. And again, as a strength coach, especially now, it's not a bad thing, but like you see all these TikTok, Instagram, fitness influencers who will say, oh, well, this is the best exercise to train your pecs or your biceps. And it's just blatantly wrong. And like, I have a ton of confidence in what I do. And I know that, but just from a perspective of handling like the critique, I my background is in American literature. So in American history. So I've always enjoyed reading. I've always enjoyed kind of that, the thought process of understanding humans and that type of thing. So it kind of just allows me to detach and understand that a lot of that stuff really doesn't, like it doesn't matter. So you do what you know you're supposed to do and you stick on that path and you accept people for having opinions that may or may not be right and just move forward with it.
What do you think that, so I was just actually just watching an NPR News Hour segment talking about the fact that with the advent of social media, you know, a lot of you were talking about TikTok fitfluencers, yeah, fitfluencer culture, what that's doing to like, young boys, young men, and how that is creating a culture of you know, eating disorders, of body dysmorphia, of feeling like we are not adequate, of getting a lot of really bad advice when it comes to nutrition and strength training, encouraging people to do some really unhealthy things.
Yeah.
You know, you're a young guy, you're in this professionally. How do you, you know, for young guys who want to be at your level, who want to one day kind of operate at that world-class level of fitness, how do you parse out good and bad information?
Well, you know, I think it's like seeing the transformation of like influence of fitness and strength. I think that's actually really cool. Like it's fun to see people trying to squat 500 pounds. Like it's as a strength professional, like that part is cool. But I think a lot of these people, and they kind of lose, you can tell it's a hobby to them. I think when you're really invested, it's more than just choosing the best exercises. Like, it's an actual science. Like there's physiology, there's physics, there's all that type of really hard stuff that a lot of people who have it as a hobby aren't very committed to doing. So you can really tell like the people who are, I can truly ingrained in the strength community, like they just have a deeper appreciation for the way that it works and the way that the body's built. And it's kind of that fascinating thing where, yeah, it's pure science, but at the same time, it's also very artistic. We have the opportunity as a strength coach sculpt a human body, a live human body, to not get hurt or killed in combat. And that's like, that's really cool. What I do, what I put on paper, what I have to train these guys to do is something that hasn't been done since like the gladiators. So it's like that part is special. It's not just looking good for Instagram likes. It's real life. It's life or death. It's such a responsibility as a strength coach.
But it's okay to look good for Instagram though, right?
Yeah. I think everybody should try to look some strong.
So if you're a young guy starting out, and you're very interested in fitness, you're very interested in sport, do you have any quick and dirty tips for are there any red flags that young men should watch out for whenever they're, trying to get good information on social media? Maybe they're a person in a more rural area. They don't have access to world-class strength coaches, or they just think, because a lot of us, they think that the people around them don't know what they're talking about. So they think that the guy on social media with a million followers obviously knows what he's doing. So I must listen to him. Do you have any like red flags for what people should watch out for so they don't go down the wrong path and hurt themselves or cause themselves some kind of psychological malady?
But I think like one of the big things that I'm kind of seeing on all that, you have these people who claim that they're natural, that they're not doing any extracurricular supplements, and a lot of them aren't. Like a lot are using some sort of thing. And like if you go to GNC and you start reading like some of the labels on pre-workout or certain types of protein or things like that, like there's a lot of bad chemicals. And I think sometimes people forget, like, all eat protein, animal protein, do simple stuff, and like, you don't have to take that risky route. And you kind of look back like at some of the old school bodybuilders, some of the old school power lifters, like, yeah, they were probably doing things that you shouldn't be doing, but a lot of that was just small, consistent progress over a long amount of time. And it doesn't all have, like, you don't need that quick fix, that quick answer probably doesn't exist. It's just kind of staying consistent, staying just nice and simple throughout the whole time, and you're going to start to see progress.
So I want to ask also about the culture of being inside of the NFL, being inside, being one of that very marginally few to kind of make it professionally on that world-class level. Professional sports have been rather immune to scrutiny for a lot of their history, mostly because of that kind of closed, tight-knit community. You know, there was community business. There's the stuff that unless it's on the field, we don't really talk about it. However, in recent years, some of the conversations happening off field have made their way into public consciousness. I'm thinking of issues like player health. We're talking about concussions. We're talking about the way that helmets should be designed so that we are protecting players. But there's all sorts of other dynamics at play that people are only just now really being clued into, and how they might affect safety, security, future of the NFL and other professional organizations like it. For example, most of the team owners are white, while most of the actual players are Black. So how do you think more eyeballs helps the NFL grow? And are there downsides to this much of the game being up for public debate?
I think I'm again in that small group where our owner is Shad Khan, and he comes from, I don't know exactly the country, but he's a minority. And we have a fantastic relationship. One, because I know his commitment to the organization and the people inside the organization. And two, he knows my commitment to the organization, the people inside the organization. And I think those are the things that need to be on the forefront of this conversation. Isn't what's dividing us or what's getting between us, or kind of that out to get you type narrative. There needs to be more positive conversations just surrounding this whole, just all of that. In my experience, there's a ton of people who have a great impact, who I'm looking from the outside in, your first kind of thought would be, oh, you have to watch out for this person. They're probably thinking this about you. And I've come to believe that's not true. And for me, like in my process of just coming out, I was listening to a lot of those narratives, those negative narratives. And then I finally shifted my mindset to listen to the positive ones. So I think just as a league and as people involved in the league, we have to kind of share that. And it's not just those, it's on both sides. It's on the people who are trying to do the right thing. It's on the people who may be doing the wrong thing. Like, we have a responsibility to change people's minds. And like I said, shift the mindset from always looking for negative to looking for some sort of positives, because there are a ton of it. There's a ton of positives. And I think a lot of people who just watch a game of football say, oh, well, they're just kind of, dumb jocks and this and that. everybody's complex, everybody's unique, everybody has their own identity outside of the color of their skin, outside whatever sexual orientation, religion. They're complex, like I said, complex and unique human beings who are, you have to appreciate them as that. It's not just grouping people into just categories for the sake of that.
So there is an element of that where, you know, folks in the audience, folks on those couches, occasionally when somebody like yourself comes out or when somebody expresses a political opinion or, you know, reveals that they are a person off the field and not just a player. When folks in the audience say, I don't want to hear that, shut up and play, you should not have any kind of opinions or anything. Usually it's because those opinions don't match theirs. And if they were maybe expressing those opinions, that they would be like, yeah, woohoo, yeah. Do you think that it is becoming more acceptable for athletes, coaches, people inside of these professional sports to be their whole authentic selves, to maybe not have to shut up and play? Do you think that there is a space for that, or is that still difficult?
I always try to take the negative and turn it into a positive. So I hear all these people, and it wasn't so much, I didn't get a ton of it, but you know, I knew the kind of, there's comments being made like, why does this matter? Who cares? Just do your job. And I think that's something that we have to embrace. And if we embrace it, we normalize it. Like those people are 100% right. It shouldn't matter if I'm gay, straight, Jewish, whatever. Like none of that stuff should matter. The thing that should matter is that I'm a good strength coach. So I think if we embrace that, I think we can fight out that hatred with love, and we can fight out that ignorance with kind of intelligence. But like you said, I think it's becoming a little bit more normalized. Just there's a generational shift that, like, I mean, we all see it in high schoolers, college kids, and as more rookies are coming in, as more people who kind of have that open mindset are coming into the league, it's just kind of becoming more, not necessarily, I don't want to say naturalized, but it's just like you don't ask questions, you don't really think about those things because it's just so common in the outside world now. And I think that's it. Like, yeah, it may sound bad, but it's one of those things, my perspective, that's the way it should be. These things shouldn't really have to be talked about to be accepted.
Do you think that people who do have the kind of spotlight that being a professional athlete, being a professional coach, being a professional in an industry where the world's eyes really are on you, do you think that there is an onus on them, knowing how many young people are looking at them, to be, I don't know, that quintessential good example? And if so, what does that look like?
Yeah, I think there's a huge responsibility, and it doesn't have to come in any specific way. If there's a closeted player in the NFL, like I think it's wrong for us as a community to expect them to come out. But I think they have a responsibility to show people that, hey, you can be who you are and not have to do anything that society really tells you to. You're allowed to be your unique individual self. But I think it one comes down to what that individual is comfortable doing. But I think, like I said, there's so many positive stories that has to be shared. There's a ton of people in my experience, they may have not broadcasted their support, but their support in the organization carried over to other people. So just in their accepting of me is helping change the kind of mindset throughout the whole organization. And that's going to help change the mindset of the whole league. And I think when the time is right, there'll be more people like Carl who have it in them to come out while they're still playing. And I hope it's only a matter of time before more and more people are just more comfortable talking about it and just being open about that conversation.
So you did, you know, kind of make some waves and a few headlines for coming out yourself. How long had you been out? I'm assuming that there was a period of time where you were out privately, so to speak, where you didn't tell the world, but maybe other folks on the team knew, or what was that baby steps like? You know, how'd you go from from inner circle to professional circle to, well, I'm in the NFL. I guess I have to tell the world now.
So it was actually, I don't even know. It's been, all my years are mixed up. So I try to go by what team I was coaching. So I was coaching at Baylor in Waco, obviously. And I was flying home. I think it was from spring break or something. I watched Love, Simon on the plane. First time I saw a black Jewish gay person, I said, huh, maybe it is all right, kind of. So I, that's after that. I saw that. I got back. I told one of my closest friends, and she was the first person that knew. And then I told, I don't know, have you heard of Sam Leck? He's the creator of PrideFit.
I've not, no. That's new to me.
Yeah, I was following him online, and he was kind of getting into that fitness and kind of posting some fitness stuff. I said, okay, well, here's someone who's gay and fitness. Let me reach out to them. So I had a conversation with him when I was at Baylor and just had that support. And it was just nice seeing that I could kind of fit in into this realm. And then fast forward, it was a few years where I kind of just kept that between me and I don't think anybody else knew, maybe one other person, just I slipped and said something. But it wasn't until Vanderbilt, when I was coaching at Vanderbilt, this was 2020. I told my brother, told my mom, and then it just became kind of so natural with the people that I was close to. And then I was at, I'm getting to it, don't worry. Then at a bachelor party this spring for one of my closest friends, and I had told them a little bit, and then we kind of had that conversation. They actually got to meet my boyfriend, and it just was like one of those things where they're like, well, why didn't you just tell us? So that was one of the big factors, just kind of seeing the way that the people close to me were reacting. That helped. And then, like I said, I got in contact with some other people, Carl, Sid from OutSports, who told me, hey, it's just going to be nothing but positive. You're going to get so much love and support. And that started to shift my narrative. So I told one of our players, I think he was retired at that time or was on the verge of retirement, but he was a 5-year captain, 8 or 9 year vet, very well respected across the whole NFL. I told him, and he said, listen, if no one's going to fuck with you, like you're, if you're good with me, you're going to be good with everybody. And it was true. So then I finally was like, okay, I was at the point where like, you know, you get that feeling like something has to happen. I was just so stuck, and I knew that this was a thing that had to happen, and Sid helped make it possible with the story from OutSports. And it was just so, things just aligned so well. The story came out. The next day we were back in camp, so we were focused on football, and it was just like everything was just back to normal after that one day. So it was just, it kind of, everything just worked out.
I think some folks listening to this might hear you say, I know that myself, when I hear you tell me that other athletes, other people in this realm, in this business, tell you, oh, if you come out, nothing bad's going to happen. It's all going to be sunshine, roses, yeah, and rainbows. And I'm just, you can't see it, but my spiritual jaw is on the floor, through the ground, deep down in the pits of hell somewhere, because that feels so antithetical to everything I think about when my brain thinks about the NFL or professional sports. So when did that shift happen? When did the NFL suddenly become so welcoming?
I have to just precursor this. I think I was just in a great situation and a great organization, a lot of good people. And I hope that's would be the same for others. But I think one thing that these guys respect more than anything is being real and being authentic and kind of having the courage. These guys are elite human beings. You always have to kind of like keep that in your mind, like where they're self-aware enough to realize, well, here's the things that I thought, maybe I thought this before, maybe I was against it, but then I developed a relationship with me, for example. He comes out, now it's challenging everything that I've thought about up to this point. Maybe I was wrong. And I think a lot of these guys, like I said, have that awareness and are really trying to be the best at what they do. So it makes sense that they would be kind of okay with that self-reflection and okay saying, hey, maybe I was wrong. This changed my mind. I may not agree with it, but I'm going to accept you. And it's not even you being, like I said, Black, Jewish, gay. I'm going to accept you because I respect you and I trust you and we have a relationship. So I think that, like I said, I may have gotten lucky that I was just with the good people, or people are actually good-hearted in nature, and we have to be a little bit more open to that idea.
So how's it been on the other side of it? Has it been great? Has it actually been all of the rainbows and butterflies and sunshine?
So it's been such a positive experience just being able to have my boyfriend come to, like, we have a little family area after the game for him to come over and just kind of be around and not have, I don't have to say, oh, this is my roommate. Mm-hmm. And to see the way that players, coaches, partners, significant others, wives, girlfriends kind of just accepted the fact that, hey, like, these guys are a part of our lives and we're going to be okay with it. Like, you know, I think of our head athletic trainer. He's a vice president of player performance or player health. So he's my boss's boss. And I was lucky enough, we have a great relationship. Me and Nick, he's my boyfriend, and Ferg and his wife, they were so supportive and so understanding, where it really made us feel a part of not just their family, but the organization as a whole. And it was just, like I said, I've just been very fortunate to be around good people, and for whatever reason.
So I'm talking to you days after the Superb Owl Usher concert. Do you have Taylor Swift's phone number?
I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. I'll be honest.
Has it been inside of the NFL during the Taylor Swiftification of the NFL this year?
This may come to a shock to a lot. Nobody cares.
Except for the audiences, nobody apparently. Cares. Like, it's the most watched television program, like, ever.
The tweets and everybody. Well, if you're not okay with it, you're a terrible part. Like, nobody cares. Do whatever. He's doing good stuff. Travis is doing good stuff. So more power to them. Let it happen.
Is there any conversation around trying to be like, well, now we have all these like Gen Z teenage girls watching. Maybe we should let the players, you know, work out in crop tops or something, like, just a little bit more appealing to this new crowd of,
I think, that, like you said, it's the most watched TV uh-huh. event ever. Like, there's so many more eyes on football now, which I think is great. Like, if you disagree with that, then there's something wrong with you. Like, there's going to be more and more people who want to play football. Maybe we'll get more people in the community to be like, okay, well, now, even though obviously Taylor's not playing football, but maybe there's something in there for me, so just to get involved. So I think it's, from that perspective, I think it's great. I wish they would show more Bruce Springsteen or George Strait or some Metallica. Yeah, absolutely. But I have to understand that.
I somehow missed the George Strait gene, but my husband is also a big George Strait fan, like big one. I think I must have missed that gay conference. Was that did I miss that invite? Was I just not invited? Is there a height requirement or something? I was
and Bruce Springsteen. I mean, just you look at some of the pictures of them back in the day, and I can see why they should have more of a gay following, I think.
So speaking of like a following, does being out, I mean, obviously being one of few, I mean, you're already one of few as an NFL strength coach. We talked about that up top, but being one of few out people in a professional sport, being one of few, you know, puts spotlight on you. Is that an added pressure? I mean, I'm sure your DMs are a nightmare, or they were, maybe, they still are. But like, is added spotlight detrimental to you in any way?
Well, when that story first came out, I told Sid, I was like, and a lot of people close to me, like, I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. Like, I thought it was going to have a very small.
You're an NFL coach. You didn't think coming out is going to be a big deal?
No, I didn't think it would kind of gain a lot of traction. Like, I thought it was just going to be like, okay, well,
next. You don't know how big the NFL is?
That was obviously.
That's a big deal. deal.
Yeah, but I the NFL were necessarily going to see it. So I don't know. That's my mindset. So, no, I
love it. That's I love when people surprise me. I never would have expected that answer.
You shouldn't. You'll understand this being from East Texas. Like I grew up in Connecticut, but I'm a very small town, very basic. Like, just give me a Miller Lite and some music, and let's just kind of detach and be in our own little group. And that, like, I don't know. I didn't think of it.
Okay, I am not the athlete in my family. I'm kind of the black sheep in that way. My dad's an athlete. My brother's a big athlete. He still competes, and he's a strength coach as well, and also a power lifter. So these next few questions are specifically from him, because I do try to research my guests somewhat and have some kind of like informed deep dive conversation about your actual job, because ostensibly this show is about you know, kind of jobs that we all think that we know about but we don't actually. So a strength coach for the NFL, I obviously, the way my brain works, I have lots of questions about like the society and culture of the NFL. He has questions about being a strength coach. So from my brother, the following questions, and listen, you could say anything right now. I'm not going to know any, you could BS me. I'm not going to know any of this. I go to the gym, but I go to the gym so I'm pretty on Instagram. I don't go to the gym so I can lift heavy things. Okay. What methodology do you base your programming off of?
Oh, okay. That's a good one. Obviously, as a part of a whole strength staff, we kind of have a group philosophy. And one of the things that we like to do is kind of use some sort of block periodization, where we'll take maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks and focus on one attribute. And then the next 2, 3, 4 weeks focus on another attribute. And that just kind of helps guys kind of be fresh and not get so kind of, I don't even know what the word is, get used to. So there's a lot of variation. We're trying to use variation. And at this level, you know, it's very important that we still try to develop guys. Like, we have some 8-year vets who, like, we want to get as much as we can out of them. And I think that's one of the things that we do differently than a lot of people across the league, and is like, we're constantly trying to improve.
Next question from my brother. When it comes to your athletes, how do you develop individual programs? Is it based off position groups, or is it more individualized than that?
So it's based off of position groups, I think, would be the number one thing. But from there, we base it off, like I said, what year they are in the league. So rookies will be doing some, like, they may have variations from a guy who's been in the league for 8 years. Then we'll also use a whole bunch of other testing metrics. So velocity-based training, which measures bar speed.
Sorry, did you just say velocity-based training? Like, oh, velocity. Sorry, I thought you said philosophy. Sorry, yeah. Go on, continue. I thought, I was like, wait, like Sartre? What? I would like, what? I'm just going to be over here.
We use technology to kind of see where guys have to improve. And I think that's that. And obviously, like, some guys will be very well in tune with training and can handle more. Other guys were kind of naive and don't really know much. So obviously their training will be a little bit different.
Final question from my brother. For a layperson, what is something you can or would implement for them to start programming effectively for themselves?
Oh, okay. I would say just some sort of progressive overload, meaning like trying to improve, whether it's adding a little bit of weight each time, adding some extra volume, so more sets or another rep, just basic, simple things. I also think that it's important that people go outside of their comfort zone a little bit. This is a principle that we use. Like, a lot of people just kind of do just enough, and they never cross that threshold of where they're actually making some adaptations. So you have to push yourself a little bit.
First question from me about fitness and exercise. I'm 6'6" and my lower back hurts all the time. Yep. Because I'm 6'6" and it hurts. It's just, it's hard. How do I keep working out to be pretty on Instagram and yep. not make my lower back hurt?
Well, you're probably very front side tight. So in your hip flexor and groin, So you may want to start stretching some of that a little bit.
I'm a married man. Please don't talk about my groin that way, sir. Gotta respect those boundaries.
That may help a little bit. Just getting some stretching in.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to leave that one alone. Oh, gosh. So something about your job that most people don't know, but you wish they did.
I think there's a wide perception of strength coaches that we all wear cutoff shirts and listen to loud music and are always doing caffeine and just doing dumb stuff like that. That's not the case. We're actually very smart people and very scientific people and very philosophic people. Like, we're not just meatheads lifting weights all day.
What's wrong with a cutoff shirt?
No, there's nothing wrong with a cutoff shirt, but there's something wrong when you're wearing a cutoff shirt and it's 20 degrees. Like, we're not just ultra tough guy people. I mean, one of the things that we have to do a lot, like, is be able to use our emotional intelligence to get these guys to do things that they probably don't want to do. And like I said, a lot of the times we're an escape for these guys from their football coaches, from the demands of football and all like the psychological stuff. So we have to be more, we have to be deep, we have to be complex, we have to know how to actually talk to people.
Is there a part of your job that you don't like?
I don't think so. Like I said, I've been doing it for 11 years or so. And some days it gets super repetitive, but that repetitiveness is almost fun because you get to master it each day. I think one of the things I guess I don't like is right now it's kind of slow. I'm only training 3 guys and I would like to be doing more, but there's periods of time where we kind of have a lot of downtime. And it's one of those things where it's hard to shut off and you always want to be doing more, but you have to kind of realize it's okay to decompress and relax a little bit.
How do you decompress and relax? What's your go-to?
I love reading. It's like I said, I was an American literature major. So I read a lot. I write poems and short stories. I paint a little bit.
Heck yes, poetry shout out. Yeah. Do you have a favorite poet?
Allen Ginsberg.
Yeah. Sir, listen.
Yeah.
Those starving hysterical nakeds are not going to, they're not going to go more gently into that good night. That's too many things. But that's, listen, I've got my little copy of Howl right there. It's always by me. I cut my poetic teeth on the Beat Poets. That was my introduction to poetry.
And then yeah. A little extended.
Look verse. At you.
So I've got that.
Look at you. So excited. Oh, gosh, we could talk for hours about poetry. I will have to send you some recs.
I'm a huge Allen Ginsberg fan, but I'm also a huge Ayn Rand fan, which I think some people would say is contradictory.
Really?
Atlas Shrugged is that's my favorite book of all time. So.
Oh, mine's American Gods by Neil Gaiman. I think that could be, I think those are very different. I think it's a very different vibe. Well, Kevin Maxson, thank you so much for spending some time here with me today and letting me pick your brain about what it's like to work in the freaking NFL, man. That's, I feel like Devil Wears, you know, it's like the Devil Wears Prada moment when it's like, oh, a million little girls would kill for your job. A million little boys would kill for your job.
I've never seen the Devil Wears Prada.
Are you sure you're gay? How sure are you?
My favorite.
Never seen.
Well, so.
Wait, say what?
Outlaw Josie Wales. I'm a Clint Eastwood fan.
Oh, God. See, you and my husband would get along so well. Of course, he also likes Devil Wears Prada. But that might be my influence.
Yeah. I'm trying to widen my range. I try to listen, I don't know what you call it, pop. Like, my boyfriend listens to like that pop kind of music. So I try to listen to it.
What do you think of Beyonce's new country songs? Is that?
I didn't listen to it.
Well, listen, yeah. We're going to have to fix a few things here. Thank you so much for spending some time with me here today, sir.
You're welcome. This was fun.
If folks want to follow you on social media, where can they do that?
Instagram. I'm a Twitter person. I don't know. What is it? KMax3824, I think is what they call it, my Instagram handle. Or is that?
Look at you.
Yeah.
I will link it in the show notes. Thank you so much. Yeah.
if your brother has any more strength questions, I'd be happy to answer for him.
I will pass them along. And that is going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Kevin Maxon. Now, if you like the show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. But before I get into those, I do feel like, I mean, I only get to do this once a year. So I am going to be guilting you all because it is my birthday this week on Thursday, April 18th. So I'm just saying it would be a great gift to me if you did any one of the following things. You could share this podcast with your friends on social media. You could also like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you're listening to it right now. And while you're there, leave a review because reviews help recommend the other listeners, help recommend the show to other listeners just like you. And see, those are all free things, and they're a great gift to me because it tells me that you're listening and you appreciate the stuff that I'm doing. If you hate the ads, I get it. I'm a listener too. We all hate ads. However, we have bills to pay. Consider joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server with access directly to me, and fun little goodies along the way. You can sign up at patreon.com/headonfirepod. And remember, I don't gatekeep my tiers, so you get everything all the time. All the tiers get everything all of the time for any amount of money, as little as a dollar a month, or, you know, because it's my birthday. If you're feeling like this podcast has brought you a lot of joy, you can turn that joy into money. or you can connect with me on social media. I am at Head on Fire Pod everywhere. Thanks for tuning in and downloading. Thanks for sharing the show. I'm going to go, but as always, do not stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.